This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Our traveling fanboys. With me, as always, is my partner in the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Nick Duke.
What the hell are we doing right now?
We're coming to you live from the Hard Traveling Studios, Ho Ho Loon Plaza, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Nick, how are you?
Bewildered. I don't know what's going on.
Nick, I'm trying to reach an international audience here.
I'm trying to
up our downloads.
We need more downloads in New Zealand, damn it. We gave those people an inordinate amount of time in the early days of this podcast, and it didn't pay off in anything.
That's right. And, you know, honestly, it kind of reinforces our mutual decision to pull away from our targeted attempts at marketing towards the New Zealand audience. Mm-hmm. However, that being said, if you are listening from New Zealand, we thank you for tuning in. I am Greg Phillips. He is Nick Duke. We're the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and we are continuing Shazam month here at the HTF Studios. And in fact, Nick, this
wrapping
week we're
bringing it up, actually. This is the final episode of Shazam month.
Yeah, this is the last episode of Shazam month. And to sort of bring things together and wrap them up with a bow, we are going off of the printed page and we are going off the page entirely to focus in on something that neither of us had ever experienced before. Thanks to the magic of the DC Universe app, we now have access to the 1970s Shazam TV series, restored and remastered.
We sure do, Greg.
We absolutely do. But in order to get some insight on this and to discuss this certainly unique topic of the 70s Shazam show, we turned to our good buddy, our friend, our mentor, if you will. The manager, Todd Weber, coming to us live via satellite from the West Coast. Todd, how are you doing, good friend?
Yeah, I'm totally shocked you worked in a mentor joke already. Asshole. So, yes, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on here as we close out Shazam month.
Did you ever have hair as good as Billy Batson's hair in this television show, Todd?
While I have had long hair, I have not had quite the beautiful coif that Billy himself sports here.
It is remarkable.
Partridge Family type haircut.
I was going to say, before we even get into this show, one of the many things that I noticed about this show, Todd, is that kids in the 70s had substantially better hair,
yes,
than we did as a kid. Because when I was a kid, everybody had either like a basic crew cut or a bowl cut or a mullet.
The bowl cut, the rat tail was big when we were kids.
Yeah, the rat tail was a mullet. Yep. But these 70s kids, they had badass haircuts,
yeah.
You know?
This is good stuff.
What can I say? Yeah, I was always gifted to have a crew cut myself, so I missed out on the beautiful hair shenanigans. Mm.
Well, we are, of course, focusing in on Shazam, and for this episode, we originally intended only to review one episode, which is Season 1, Episode 12, titled The Delinquent, which features a guest appearance from a very young...
Which actually, on the DC Universe app, is titled The Delinquent, with no initial N on this episode that I'm looking at. Yeah, right.
One might argue that it's an appropriate typo, but it features a very young Jackie Earle Haley in a guest spot. But let's talk before we delve into this episode, because Nick and I ended up watching multiple episodes of this show. Let's talk a little bit about this television show. So I read up on Wikipedia to get a little information on this, Todd, but hopefully you can fill me in on some of the finer details.
Sure.
Of how this whole thing worked, but a half-hour live-action television show that started in 1974 and ran through 1977, and it was produced as a live-action show by Filmation, which I'm familiar with through their animated shows from the 60s. But how did all of this come about? I mean, I'm not even certain. I guess that Shazam was owned by DC at this time.
Yes.
That they had bought out Fawcett. But how did all this come about, and what do you remember about this show?
Well, first off, that's multiple questions. Let's talk about how the show came about. You know, Filmation was a studio that was looking for properties, looking for things to get some of that valuable Saturday morning time. And so they would pitch things, and they didn't have a lot of licenses at this point. They were still doing Star Trek, the animated series. You may be familiar with that. And that was going somewhat well for them. But they wanted to get back into the superhero game based on the Super Friends' initial success on ABC. So they pitched an animated show featuring Shazam, who was the only DC character that they could get their hands on, specifically because they had contacts at DC from the late 60s where they had their animated shows. And, you know, there was an animated Aquaman that was Filmation, animated Superman, Batman shows. But all of those characters were locked up by Hanna-Barbera for Super Friends. So they offered them Shazam. The people at Filmation put together an animated treatment for it. And then CBS said, well, we'd like to try something different, maybe live action. And lo and behold, the guys at Filmation said, well, let's try that. They built a sound studio, and that comes that will come into play in a second, because most of these episodes were not done on the soundstage at all. They were all on location for the most part. But they built this studio and cast some leads, and lo and behold, they had a 15 episode season ready to go in fall of 1974. And
wow.
I have vague memories of it from the first run, and apparently it was running in syndication and in reruns up until 1980. So I guess I must have seen it around age 4, age 5, 75, 76 or so, because that's when you can start having some of those crystalline memories.
Sure.
I remembered a lot of the details of the gist of it, the things we'll talk about as we watch the episode. I also remember the companion show that they created after a season to go along with this. And so I always associate the two shows, Shazam and Isis, which was character created for TV and then bought by DC.
Hmm. Very. Yeah. I've always wondered about that, because I remember the first time I think I ever even encountered Isis was in the 52.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was not reading Justice Society at that time. So I encountered her in 52 and Black Adam's sort of mourning period as a result of what happens with Isis. So I didn't realize that she was a TV character first.
She was kind of hot too. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll get on that. We'll get to that a little bit later, maybe. But like, I went and watched one of the Isis episodes of this, and I told Nick today that like I came away thinking that Isis was way cooler than Captain Marvel on this TV show.
they let her do more, that's for sure. The episodes were a little bit more interesting because she was a teacher, as opposed to Billy and Mentor, where they were doing the same thing, which we'll talk about on every episode, every single episode.
So let's talk about the cast. You mentioned the casting. They cast Michael Gray as young Billy Batson. Although I have to say, he doesn't look that young.
No, he was 20.
He looks like he's.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Nuts.
I'm sorry. He was in his mid 20s when they cast him. So yeah. So wow. Like 23, 24, he had been on a couple shows, including the Brady Bunch as a guest star. And then he had a show called The Little People that was on the NBC with Brian Keith. And apparently that turned him into kind of a teen heartthrob, you know, one of those Leif Garrett type guys that would be right in the teen magazines.
Yeah. And he looks every bit of mid 20s on this show to me. Like he looks like a young man rather than a teenager necessarily. But, nonetheless, and he's accompanied, by the, by the an older figure who's named Mentor and is played by the actor Les Tremaine. Now, this is a character that, to my knowledge, is not from any of the comics that I've encountered of Captain Marvel. This is one of the many changes we'll get to.
No, they kind of changed the Shazam wizard into Mentor. Only Shazam had powers and could do things. Mentor could drive an RV.
Hey, he could shoot the hell out of a bow and arrow as we come to
the an expert archer. He taught Cupid. He taught Cupid how to first unfurl his arrow. Unfortunately, Cupid missed. But again, we'll tackle that in a moment. And then we have Captain Marvel, who originally, in the episode that we're going to be talking about here, is played by Jackson Bostwick, who, according to his Wikipedia entry, this was pretty much the only significant thing that he did in his acting career. Although he was a contestant on the television show The Dating Game. He played a guard in Tron.
That was his last credit. He was eventually cast in Tron, and you know, he wasn't blacklisted, but there were things that happened in Shazam that caused him not to get any more roles for a long, long time.
So, oh, Lord.
But, yeah, they were initially, they had a casting call for Captain Marvel, and one of the people who read was Mark Harmon, who is now on NCIS.
Yeah.
So that would be interesting to see him as, from summer school, right? So to see him as Captain Marvel. I don't know that he's necessarily tall enough pull it off. But yeah, they went with Jackson Bostwick, who had a great smile, if I can say so.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly.
I'm Captain Marvel.
I'm Captain Marvel. We'll talk about that in just a moment, but let's go ahead and let the people fired up. If you have the DC Universe app, or if for some reason you own this show on DVD, you can join with us right now. It's season 1, episode 12, and I am going to hit the play button. In 3, 2, 1, play. And right off the bat, we're getting the somewhat unique intro sequence featuring a glowing red ball, cartoon drawings of 7 mysterious figures.
Six, sorry.
What does he call them?
They are the elders. Not the gods. Yes. They couldn't say gods because that would be a little controversial for 1970s television.
Yeah, so the elders, who are, of course, all of the figures who lend their powers to Captain Marvel, with Solomon and Achilles and Mercury and Hercules and, God, who else? Who am I leaving out?
Atlas,
yes. And they're all giving, you know, they're cartoon figures, but everyone else in the show is live action. So the premise of this show, as opposed to what we've been talking about during Shazam Month, I think to this point we've pretty well got it established that young Billy Batson, he's an orphan, and he meets the wizard Shazam, who grants him the powers of the gods to call upon, if he says the magic word, and to help those in need, and keep at bay the 7 deadly enemies of man. We know Mary, his sister. We know Talkie Tawny, the talking tiger figure. And we know some of his villainous characters. Well, the best thing to do going into this is forget all of that. All you need to remember is that he's Billy Batson, and he says Shazam, and he turns into Captain Marvel. Everything else is different, as far as I can tell. We've got, and there you see a very young Jackie Earle Haley.
Oh, my.
And there's just no mistaking that that's Jackie Earle Haley.
Mother.
playing an ignorant shit heel here as well.
Mother, I went to the grocery store.
This is even before Bad News Bears.
Yes. Because Bad News Bears was, what, 76?
Yeah, and he gets his big break then. So
yeah.
And
so far we're just watching campers. We have no Shazam, no Billy, no Mentor.
And we won't really get Captain Marvel / Shazam much in this episode, or in any other, really.
No.
Yeah.
What I can tell. No. These shows seem to be heavy. This show relies heavily on you investing in the Mentor and Billy Batson dynamic. So let's explain that dynamic, shall we? In this series, Billy Batson and Mentor, who is an old man, of course, they drive around the country. I guess the country. They drive around in the highways and byways, as it's put in the intro, helping those in need in their giant RV with a lightning bolt symbol on the front of it. What do they do in between episodes? Well, apparently just sleep, I guess. I don't know. But in the, I know that I went back and watched the pilot, and Billy mentions delivering the news at one point, which, of course, is a part of Shazam's past with Wiz radio and all that stuff. But that's never really brought up in any other episodes that I watched, including this one here.
Can I ask a question right here? Why are Mentor and Billy just hanging out at this summer camp?
I'm going to speculate that this is just a place where there is porta-potties, and it's a camping area that doesn't seem to be too saturated with summer campers. Also, you know, don't ask questions like that.
Okay.
Also, young Jackie Earl Haley, little Norm here, he is the worst oarsman of all time. He just blatantly threw that thing in the water and then tipped over. Oh, the first of what will become, to me, the iconic shot of this series, which is a close-up shot of Mentor making a confused face.
Ah!
What's going on? Captain Marvel, though, to the rescue as Norm is about to drown. Now, clearly, when he is, you know, because Norm's down there in the water, he must first soar up into the clouds.
He must fly the 15 feet away from the water that he was. Dive at a diagonal angle into the water. Yes.
Oh Lord!
Sorry, Todd. You were about to say something.
This is too rich. I put the captions on. Finally,
they could not like, there was no wire rigs back in these days, so like they had to just literally drop him into the water.
Yeah.
And now watch, instead of picking him from the water and flying him back to safety, he's just gonna swim really fast.
Really fast. I think they sped that tape up. Oh, either no, they're dragging him from a boat.
Yeah, he's holding the thing. You can see him holds the little bar. He's being dragged by a boat.
Oh, Mentor is happy. Good. Yeah, this is good stuff.
We saved Norm.
Yeah, you'd think that Norm would be happy that he had his life saved, but no, he's not that happy.
Look how dry Captain Marvel is.
This is like 74?
Yes.
Is that what you determined? And this is just like, this is completely unrealistic for the South, because there's no way white parents are leaving all their kids under the supervision of a black teenager in 1974 down in these parts.
Well, who knows exactly where it is? Did they say what state they're in, or are we kind of assuming they're in the South?
We're assuming not the South.
Yeah,
is what
they're in the highways and byways.
That's right.
Well, they filmed everything in just kind of the recreational areas of Southern California, places they could go on location. And production was so cheap, they would do two episodes a week. And they would always be sure to start the second episode they filmed that week in the same location as they left. Only they wouldn't call it that. They would just do that because it was cheaper. Billy's calling the elders now.
Yeah, what is this thing? What is this red thing with the
Have
lights
they ever
on
explained
it?
It's called
that?
A brazier, and that's how he summons the elders. Don't ask.
Did I just want these guys to be voiced by Adam West, or was one of them actually
one of them was
Adam West?
One of them was, and he did the narration on the opening sequence too.
There you go. I could have swore that was him, but I didn't want to, you know, state definitively, because there were so many in the time period who kind of had
no
that
credits.
Type of voice.
But
really,
can you guys recite the line that Billy has to say when he calls the elders?
No,
I forgot already.
Oh, elders, fleet and strong and wise, appear before my seeking eyes.
There you go.
That's his version of the Green Lantern Oath.
Well, it rhymes, so I'm going to have to break out one of my imitations since it's a rhyme.
Do it.
Oh, elders, fleet and strong and wise, come before my seeking eyes.
Leapin' Lanny Poffo
thank you.
Makes
thank
his
you very much.
You. On the Hard Traveling Fanboys. That was fantastic.
I discovered that the other night with on the Mothership podcast. I was able to pull that out, and I think it's going to stick around, I think.
So. I think it must.
I've also been working on my Lanny Poffo impersonation lately, but not with much success. I'll put it that
Deeds,
way.
Deeds, not words. Yes, I know what you're speaking.
He's trying to orally pleasure himself. Yeah.
So now what's happening? I don't know what the elders told Billy to do or if it matters, but now he's giving a lecture
The elders told him to make Frank or make Norm believe in himself, to make Jackie O'Haley believe in himself. So of course he decides, hey, I had a good time at this survival course that I took a while back. I'm going to teach survival tactics to Norm to instill confidence in him.
I don't believe that Billy Batson had a good time at a survival course.
I don't either.
So now Billy, oh, there's no hair. There are no hair care products in survival courses. No.
Oh, look at the creepy smile on Mentor's face. He's really happy to be at this youth camp.
Man, 70 shorts. They were right up there, weren't they? Mm-hmm. They were, yeah, firmly.
No,
not huggers.
On the inner thigh.
Wait just a second. You're gonna.
Greg with his defense of John Stockton. Go ahead.
Greg. I knew exactly where he was going with that.
There's nothing wrong with a short. You know, sometimes it helps with the flexibility. The agility.
We're being joined this week by Andrew Chandler Fraser Garner, apparently.
Well,
so he knows all. You notice Billy's always wearing the same thing. Apparently, yes. His wardrobe for Billy was 10 of these red sweatshirts with the yellow cuffs, 10 pair of the pants, and 10 pair of those matching sneakers.
Yeah, and he's in like there. I mean, it's a summer camp, and they're you know hiking through the hills. He's got to be like a million degrees.
This has
got to be miserable for him.
After I watched these episodes last night, I went and I watched the short animated film Superman Shazam: The Return of Black Adam, and there's what I assume must be an allusion to this show on there, kind of making fun of that very concept, Todd, where young Billy Batson walks to his closet and opens the door, and inside his closet are five of the exact same shirt, which he takes out and compares to one another and goes, eh, before settling on one. Let me ask you about this. Is this just a style of filming that was common amongst shows at this time? The constant zoom ins on the face that go like really tight.
Most of the live action kids shows at this time were done by Sid and Marty Croft. So I have to say that's probably a yes. You know, you think about the Bugaloos, and I'm trying to think of some of the other, you know, Land of the Lost, certainly.
Land of the Lost,
you know,
yeah.
It feels like it could be the same thing. They also filmed this because it had to have some special effects on 35mm instead of 16. So I don't know if that gave them more play to do shots like that, but I think that was just kind of status quo for live-action TV in the mid-70s.
This has got to be an unacceptable safety risk here. Billy is having this young child attempt to rappel down a mountain.
And hey, at least Jackie O'Haley is doing his own stunts. No prima donna here back in 1974. No,
absolutely. But if he falls to his doom here, see, Billy is not going to turn into Captain Marvel because he thinks back to what the elder said of you have to let some people learn for themselves. So as young Norm falls and repeatedly says he's losing his grip on the rope, I mean, this is not very responsible behavior from Billy Batson, in my opinion.
He probably the wisdom of whichever one it was told him that
Solomon.
Yeah, the wisdom of Solomon told him to just let him go. He'll be fine. He's not gonna hurt himself here. Also, the wisdom of Solomon told him to. Never mind. I was gonna do a biblical joke, and it's not gonna make sense.
Oh, come on.
Here Norm is not even trying to save himself, just sitting there.
He's just
dangling.
Sitting there. He's frozen. He's frozen in place because he doesn't understand the value of friendship, Nick.
We had a literal cliffhanger on that that cut.
And of course, Billy can't transform to Captain Marvel here and save him because he has a secret identity, right?
No, that's not why. The reason that he doesn't transform is he thinks back to the advice that's given to him by the giant redheaded version of Solomon.
Is that Solomon or is it Hercules?
I think that's Hercules. Yeah, I think it's Hercules that gives him the advice. Yeah.
Yep.
Hercules tells
him. Why are you listening to Hercules?
I have no idea why you listen to Hercules.
Yeah, because there's no wizard, so he just has to listen to all of them, apparently. That's how this works.
Yeah, they were kind of just interchangeable in the advice that they would give.
Yeah.
Do they actually differentiate from episode to episode which one was speaking?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
This week it's Mercury's turn. We are paying to draw Mercury's mouth this week.
Yeah. So this is sort of the theme of this show, how it works, from what I've gathered from watching these episodes. They have these every episode is about a different moral. Mm-hmm. And the way that they get across that moral is they come Billy and Mentor come across a youngling, usually, who is struggling with something, whether bullying, whether peer pressure, whether they're a loner, whether they're cheating on their school tests or something like that. And so Billy and Mentor have to help here we see Mentor with his amazing bow and arrow.
Unlike a silver Oliver Queen, honestly.
Yeah, like, I was just
with
thinking
the hair that. And the mustache and stuff. Yeah, I could see it.
Things went really bad. He took Felicity's death very hard.
He decided to find a young ward and travel around in an RV. So they just go around trying to solve problems for people. And in the process of this, things happen like, you know, the forest catches on fire or, you know, young Norm gets lost in the woods. And so they have to call upon Captain Marvel to help in those situations. But don't expect villains here. No, there's nothing in the way of villains. There's nothing in the way of a physical threat for Captain Marvel, at least in the episodes that I experience. Here, for instance, there could have been a physical threat for Captain Marvel, as we're about to see, because we're about to meet a goddamn bear. But what does the bear do when Captain Marvel shows up? He just turns around and walks off.
Do they keep the motorcycle inside the RV?
They put it on the back.
Okay.
The first season they had it on the back. The other two, apparently they didn't. So Billy lost the motorcycle somehow. I read that they had insurance concerns about the motorcycle. First Jackie class
Earl
production
here. Jackie Earl Haley stole the motorcycle and took it to Bad News Bears.
Or it was Danny Bonaducci, who also was on an episode of Shazam here.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know which one it was, but I can find out, I'm sure, easily enough. But I thought
future
because of our Watchmen
future
connection.
WCW Dark Match competitor, yes. Danny Bonaducci.
Mm.
Handsome individual.
Yes, almost as handsome as Jackie Earl Haley. Let's see. So this these sunglasses also that Billy Batson's wearing
are nice.
Are fantastic. These are like some Elvis level sunglasses. Now he's gonna try to talk Norm into coming back to the camp, but Norm doesn't believe him. And look at the strength from Norm. Watch this. Boom!
And down goes Batson. Down goes Batson.
Norm, you're right, Todd. There's no way that Billy Batson made it through a
survival
course.
Camp. Yeah.
Oh. What did you do? Are we meant to believe that he hit his head on the stump or something and has been rendered unconscious?
I thought so, but when they show the replay, you'll see what happened to him. And he didn't hit anything. He just fell. He's that weak. He just got pummeled by a child that's like half his size.
He's just laying there. He is selling.
Look at Norm.
He's taking his time. Selling.
If I'm Norm, while he's back there selling, I'm strutting around. I'm absorbing the heat. You know, think about what a badass Norm is. If he goes back to camp and says, "I just kicked that older kid's ass,"
and then we have our flashback sequence.
There it goes. No, nope, just fell.
Didn't hit his head on anything.
He's not just selling. He's giving us some of that Kurt Hennig selling, JR. Mm-hmm.
Billy's got poor nutrition, you know, eating stew all the time in the RV. He's got no muscle tone whatsoever.
Veal tripe, as we were told earlier.
That's just how Mentor likes him, Todd.
Oof.
There's just something weird to me about an old guy
driving an RV with
a kid that isn't related to him. Oh. Weird.
Oh my. Here's some bait for the teenage girls back in the day. Splashing young Billy's face, rubbing it with water.
Well,
there he is.
Oh, there he is. Now, this is the best part of the episode.
Yes.
Todd, you were saying
a minute ago that apparently the motorcycle was an insurance concern, but
yes.
A fucking bear.
The bear wasn't, you know. Apparently they had well, we haven't seen the bear in the same shot with them yet, have we?
That's true.
But apparently they had some kind of lure to get the bear away, and Billy's Michael Gray recalls that it was the smelliest thing he can recall the smell of what they used to get the bear to turn away to this day.
That was their saving safety feature? A lure? What if it didn't work?
Well,
trust Jack, us, kid.
They had
trust
a bow and arrow.
It'll work. Oh, God.
This is amazing. This is the this bear. Should have been the whole episode.
What could possibly go wrong?
Just the bear chasing
the bear chasing this child.
Jack and O'Haley's shock face.
Yep, Mentor is going to have to shoot him with his arrow.
Run. Run, child.
No, stay where you're at, Norm. You're such a badass. You just kicked Billy Batson's ass. Why don't you try the bear?
Why don't you go push the bear down, Norm?
Yeah. Oh, look at Billy just finally making his way to his feet. He's like Earl Hebner when he got bumped in a match.
There it is.
Staying unconscious. Now.
Earl says the bear was in on it, Greg.
Earl says a lot of things. We're going to wrestle the bear for 60 minutes.
There goes Captain Marvel. Now see,
you think business is going to pick up, right?
The tree is here. Why didn't he fly with the trees earlier when he had to save him from drowning instead of going up into the sky?
Well, here's the other thing. You would think business is about to pick up here, right? Captain Marvel's going to fight a fucking bear.
Yeah, he's going
to
stop this bear from killing.
Look at this bear. Look how fast this bear is, too.
Yeah,
this is going
like
to be a good
circus
fight.
Bear or a dancing bear.
Yeah.
This is going to be a good fight, right? And now you got Mentor lining up his shot
to murder the bear.
And Captain Marvel, here's what he does. Oh, he stops the arrow. But now you might think to yourself, Captain Marvel is going to fight the bear. No, the bear suddenly has interest in eating the child. The bear was hungry, clearly, and he was going to eat that child. And now
the bear
stern look causes him to leave.
The bear saw Mentor and said, I better get out of here because I know what he's about to do to that kid.
Now, Captain Marvel here, Todd, is it fair for me to say that he doesn't – he looks not unlike a young John Schneider.
Yeah, same kind of look.
Good-looking Dukes of Hazzard.
Big teeth and good-looking blue eyes. Hey, are we actually going to see a reverse transformation? We don't see this very often in the show where they
really?
Run the tape backwards.
Oh, cool.
They do. They literally run the reel backwards and he turns
and
back.
And so in this episode, we're like 20 minutes in, and I would say maybe 2 minutes of screen time total for Captain
maybe?
Marvel. Is that kind of – par for
if
the course.
That.
Boston was paid by the minute.
I was trying to shoot on the high end, but yeah. This is really a show that is far more enamored with Billy Batson than it is with Captain Marvel, it seems.
Well, they wanted to keep your attention, you know, so is he going to change now? Are we going to – although it's very predictable. You know, we'd get Captain Marvel in the first 10 minutes and then, or the first 7 minutes or so, and then at the very end.
I was going to say, from the episodes that I watched, most of these issues could be solved very quickly if he just transforms into Captain Marvel
from the
get-go.
Oh, yeah. Well, here we go.
So for some
of
these
they all,
things...
They all end with a PSA, right?
Yep.
Like
a little statement of the moral.
And they
Captain Marvel
all these
has
morals the same day.
Really?
Yes.
And that's why he looks like that's why he's high on Quaaludes in this.
There's a lot
before we can like others, we have to learn to like ourselves.
Did Captain Marvel ever speak in an actual episode? Because I don't think he spoke in this one.
Yeah, he does.
He said we got to get Billy there to meet the boys.
Oh, that's right.
He says stuff. Yeah, he talks to Isis, and he talks to in the first episode, he talks to the kids that are stealing
doing
vehicles.
The joyrides. Yep.
The joyrides, yep.
That one, those guys, I want to hang out with them. They were very cool.
I know. Yeah. They were really cool.
So for
the joyriders, man. That was pretty.
They had a green screen, but they also would do a thing where they rigged him to the top of a pickup truck and then filmed from the below, and so you could see the trees behind him as he went.
Yeah, that had to have been what the second flying sequence was in the episode. Then
that's actually pretty creative.
Just want to see what that looked like out of context, you know?
Oh, I know. Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing, this show is like, in some ways, it's such a historical oddity to me because it's a live-action comic book TV show. What was contemporaneous with this at the time? Was it like Wonder Woman? Was that on yet?
It was in between Wonder Woman. So the very bad Wonder Woman Kathy Lee Crosby movie had aired. And then they said, Scheimer, who the creator of the show, said, we can do better than that, but... You know, I think we can do this on TV now. And then after this came out, she came in, and then Hulk was a few years later. So there was almost nothing.
Yeah, so it's kind of in this kind of no man's land territory, because obviously the Incredible Hulk show everyone remembers as being a classic. But yeah, this one, I guess I was expecting something with a little bit more fidelity to the comics. But watching this, man, I got to be honest, this was brutally bad.
Yep.
outside of the unintentional humor. Todd, what did you make of this one and this particular episode that we were talking about?
Well, you know, I think it holds up if you're going to make fun of it. It is a right. relic of its time. You can see what kids my age were watching as children being presented with. Episodes couldn't be too violent or too realistic, but boy, it's weird to have the Billy and mentor relationship the way it is. And apparently nobody blinked at that back then. Nobody. If it was his grandpa, sure, I'll buy it. Nope, nobody said nothing. Mentor was just the guy that was taking Billy around the country who was apparently on assignment. I think they said he worked for the radio station one time in all of the episodes. And this show was a hit. The show was second in its time period the first season, and then number one wow. in its time period the second season.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a big hit.
It's so weird that because it, like, I don't think I was even aware of it until like maybe a year ago when I happened to see it on a Wikipedia listing. So like
I remember
it's weird that it would have been so popular, then yet it didn't really stick in terms of like the pop culture legacy aspect.
Yeah. I knew about it maybe when I was in like just out of college, and they used to show reruns of it on like E Network or something like that, or WGN or one of those channels I don't watch very much. But I would flip the channels and I'd be like, "Hey, that looks like Captain Marvel," and I'd watch it, and it was this show. I would never watch an entire episode, but I was aware of its existence. So, but that was how I became aware of it, because you don't hear anybody really talk about this show much, no. Do you?
No, not too often. I mean, it's kind of a thing that people of my generation acknowledge was a thing, but we were much more into Super Friends, big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Super Friends had a much greater effect and led to us reading comics and things like that. Shazam, even though they changed the comics slightly around 1976 to accommodate the show, you know, they had Uncle Dudley grow a mustache and start wearing the stupid jacket and acting like Mentor. It was still
really?
Uncle Dudley. Yeah. I don't think it lasted more than a year or so. But yeah, there was a run in the DC Shazam book where they did kind of co-opt this scenario.
Wow. Did they have the RV as well?
I believe they did.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, it's interesting because it seems like those shows from that era, Wonder Woman and The Incredible Hulk sort of are the ones that I think of in my mind as being the big like successes mm-hmm. of that era. And then, you know, even stuff like the much ballyhooed Marvel shows of that time, Spider-Man or Captain America or what have you. I don't know if Captain America was a show, but certainly there was the TV movie. But like, This one is just very interesting, and it's funny because I was looking through some of the people that have guest starred on here. We mentioned earlier Jackie Earle Haley, but there have been several guys and women as well that guest starred on this over the years. So obviously it was successful, but man, this is one that just does not hold up well outside of you know, making fun of things like the Mentor Billy relationship, the weird, incredibly weird live action / still animation sequences here with the elders, the morals at the end. You were talking about that in our chat group, Todd, about how much you enjoy the moral segments right. at the end of every episode.
Well, if you think back, Fat Albert would do the same thing. Same production company, same thing. It was Filmation. So I think that was just a formula that they used to summarize it. And I don't know if they got special governmental benefits from doing that. You know, sometimes they would have an educational consultant on the show to help with that, or you know, you look in the credits, they had some kind of accreditation. So that was a thing that you heard even in up to G.I. Joe, you would see those things.
Yeah, the more you know, or knowing is half the battle,
right?
But yeah, what's great is the Wikipedia entry on this show has the moral from each episode listed underneath it. For instance, the first episode's moral is, it's important to do what you know is right and not get conned into doing something dumb just because somebody calls you names. It often takes more courage to do what's right than to go along with the crowd. Good little moral there. And then let's skip down a couple of episodes here. And where did it go? Ah, here's one of my favorite morals. The desert and traditions of other people have much to teach us and must be preserved for future generations to see and to know.
So, yeah, that must be the Native American episode.
Yeah, it says, two men have been digging up Indian artifacts in the desert and selling them. An Indian chief and his grandson, Johnny, try to get them to stop but are unsuccessful. Billy and Mentor offered their help to keep these priceless treasures where they belong. Now, admittedly, that sounds like a slightly more interesting plot than Boy is a Loner and Doesn't Like Other People.
But I bet you it's not.
No!
If you've seen one almost episode of Shazam, you've basically seen them all. Even though Jackson Bostwick, I can say that, allegedly got injured halfway through season two, and they found the cheapest replacement, quickest replacement they could in former boxer John Davey, another guy who had no credits, kind of a bumbling guy. He wasn't as good looking as Bostwick. Bostwick ended up suing, saying there was a communication breakdown that he was supposed to be let off. And the producer said, no, you should have been here. So it went on for years and years. And not good for any of their careers, apparently.
Yeah. So despite the sort of drug-addled appearance of Bostwick in the moral of the episode that we watched, he at least looks like a hero. John Davey looks like some dude from a bar that they just pulled in.
I just found the picture.
Oh, yeah. Lord. Hello.
And they said, we're going to need you to squeeze into this suit.
Yep. Same suit.
He might as well. John Davey might as well be modern day John Daly from the PGA Tour.
So this guy just does not look like a hero at all. He looks like he's intoxicated. He looks like he's been out of work for some time. And then I'm looking at his filmography. He made his last acting appearance in an uncredited role in what 1980s cult hit?
Which one?
Davey.
In what?
Davey or Bostwick?
Davey.
Bostwick was in Tron.
Yeah, Bostwick was in Tron, as we discussed.
This was
earlier.
A TV show that was a somewhat of a cult show in the late 80s.
Oh, I don't know.
No idea.
Twin Max Peaks. Headroom.
Max really? Headroom.
Okay. Yep. Matt Frewer.
He was in the episode Blipverts. Yes, he was also in Davey was also in an episode of MacGyver as State Trooper. The same role that would later gain great infamy in WCW via the Highway Patrol gimmick for Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker.
I did not know that.
So
learn something new every day.
Yeah. So Shazam, let's kind of wrap up our thoughts on this series. I did want to mention this, though. In the end of season two, there is actually a crossover episode with Secrets of Isis, and we talked about earlier the character of Isis. She was just so much cooler. In this episode of Shazam, you get the typical, okay, these kids are in trouble. Captain Marvel comes to save the day at the end. But for some unknown reason that isn't explained in the episode that I can remember anyway, Captain Marvel needs help, I guess because there's a forest fire and these kids are in trouble. So he can only do one or the other. So Mentor goes and finds Isis in her in her alter ego of teacher Andrea Thomas, and he busts in and he says, hey, I need your help. And she goes, well, who are you? And he goes, well, I'm Mentor. And she goes, oh, well, who sent you here? And he goes, the elders. Sure enough, the elders. So Andrea, the rather ravishing Andrea Thomas transforms into the mighty Isis, and she goes. And so Captain Marvel is trying to help these two people with their problem by, like, you know, pulling their foot out of stones or whatever. Isis shows up and causes a damn storm to show up and put out the fire, lifts a boulder in the process. She's just so much better than Captain Marvel.
Yes, she is. Good Lord.
Easy there.
You know what's even better than Isis? Lois Lane from Smallville as Isis.
Oh. That's on here when I Googled Isis 1970s. That's one. Yes. That's one of the images that popped up.
Great. It's going to be okay, sir.
he says as he types.
Lord have mercy. I don't remember that happening.
Oh, I
there you go, Greg. Check your Facebook.
Now, what did Lee Tremaine go on to do? AKA Les Tremaine.
Death.
Oh, yeah, come on.
He did some more voiceover work. He was a radio guy from the 50s, and then he ended up doing more voiceover stuff and then died in 2003.
He died in 2002? He looks 75 here.
Yeah.
Good Lord, he lived.
Do you know that he was blessed by the elders, Nick?
He's probably 47 there.
47?
Also 47. Todd Weber, right now.
But you look 47 going on like 35 or 40. He looked 47 going on 68.
People in the 70s and 80s just looked older, Nick.
They looked Judy Martin. Terrible.
Judy Martin, exactly. Arn Anderson. Arn Anderson was 15 when the Four Horsemen started. Hmm. People don't realize that. So, yeah, what is this golf cart? Sorry, they auto-played the next episode of Captain Marvel. This dude's driving around in a golden golf cart with three wheels. This is amazing. Anyway, so Shazam. This is the fourth distinct version of Captain Marvel that we have, or Shazam, that we've experienced this month, Nick. And by far, the most unique.
Yes. Yes, I would say that. Certainly a unique situation.
Todd, give us some of your wrap-up thoughts on this show and its place in the greater Shazam pantheon.
Well, nobody's going to look back and say, boy, I wish they still made him like that. But people people who grew up on it are fondly going to remember. And it's cheesy but fun. Short, at least the episodes are short.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And boy, they got the costume pretty right for the time, which is impressive.
No doubt. Yeah, that's something we didn't mention, and we should. The costume is very comic book accurate.
Mm-hmm.
The costume for Captain Marvel here looks better than the costume for Green Lantern in the 2011 movie. So take that for what it's worth.
Yeah. I only wish that they had found some way to show homage to this incarnation of Shazam in the movie.
Yeah.
Not that it owes a ton to it, but just because
they could have had Billy having a crisis of conscience when he runs across an old man with a pencil thin mustache. Who
they could have had the adoptive parents own the old beat up RV out in the backyard.
Ah, there you go.
That would have been a nice one.
You know, come to think of it, there is that scene where they go looking after Billy in a vehicle, but it's not an RV, is it? It's something else. I don't remember.
It's like a van.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. Closest we could get. But yeah, I think you're right. There's probably some nostalgic value in this. I imagine the experience for a lot of people that watch this on DC Universe will be similar to mine when I go back and watch some of the shows that I remember being great when I was a kid, like He-Man.
Also, I watched it.
Really? Yes. Yeah. So I remember they had He-Man briefly on either Netflix or Hulu a few years ago, and I went on and watched like the first three or four episodes, and it was not like I remembered it. I remember it being so much smoother.
That was my experience with the Turtles when I tried to revisit realized I need to – it's best to leave that where it was.
Well, Todd, one of the things that you were mentioning to me was the story about the restoration of this show, because we should mention this. This has been remastered and looks fantastic. The video
there's a documentary quality. On DC Universe about that. It's called Restoring Shazam or something like that.
And yeah. Todd has actually viewed it, right?
I did. It was fascinating. You know, the getting in, going frame by frame on some of this stuff, just cleaning it up, digitizing it, and making it look really not 50 years old. Well, 45 years old.
No, it looks brilliant, man. The picture quality is just fantastic. It's better. It's a lot higher than some of the picture quality on shows that came later that we have access to. So It's probably not too far removed from Lois and Clark video quality, which hasn't really had any such process done to it. So, very, very impressive stuff. Oh, yeah. I do too.
I mean, somebody must have loved it in Warner's archives because, mm-hmm. you know, they put some major time into it. And, you know, there's not a ton of episodes, so it wasn't that long of a thing, that exhaustive of a process. But still, it's nice that they did that. And I wish we would see some more of the shows of that era cleaned up like that.
Totally. And one other thing I want to mention about this show is that it's a good thing about shows in the 70s is we see a lot of shots of like live animals in this show, whether it be the bear. Here I'm looking at like a bird of some kind. We also see shots of like elaborate car chase sequences and things like that. Maybe not elaborate, but sequences where they're driving through cities and towns and stuff like that. Today, that would all be probably badly CGI'd on a TV show.
Yes.
So it's kind of refreshing to see actual creatures and actual vehicles used in these sequences. I've just grown so accustomed to the mediocre TV CGI effects.
And stock footage, stuff like that, B-roll.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't necessarily look any worse than an episode of Chips.
Yeah. And actually, I was going to say, Billy Batson doesn't look unlike a young Eric Estrada in some ways. At least he has a similar hairstyle.
Those feathers, man.
Oh, yeah. That was the style. I would give anything to have hair like that, or hair at all right now. But it's just not in the cards, baby. The elders haven't granted me that ability. Good Lord, what a creepy smile he's got. So with all that being said, Todd, tell the folks where they can contact you through social media and tell the folks what you have coming their way. You, I don't think I mentioned this at the beginning, are, of course, the host of Conversation Comics and Binge Please right here on Place to Be Nation Pop. Tell the people what they can expect from you and how they can contact you via social media.
Follow me at Todd Weber Guitar on Twitter, at Guitars of Green on Instagram, although I don't Insta like some people Insta. And I've got Binge Please probably dropped a week before this episode came out, the previous Saturday. So check that out. I talked a little bit about Game of Thrones episode 1 of season 8. And then Conversation Comics dropped a few weeks ago, still talking about the Dark Phoenix saga with our good friend Tim Capel. And you never know, I'm one of those guys that will be on a lot of shows these days here on Place to Be Nation Pop.
There you have it. And, of course, Todd is the production genius behind many of the shows that you hear on Place to Be Nation Pop, including for 8 consecutive episodes.
Oh, yeah, 158, yeah.
The Hard Traveling Fanboys, which is the longest running
weekly
episodic comic book podcast in all of Place to Be Nation.
Yes, it is.
and so Todd is the guru that makes it all work. That's why we refer to him as the manager. And much like Bobby the Brain Heenan, he signs our contracts. He makes sure that we're getting things done. And he would never, ever trade our services to the Doctor of Style Slick. Right,
no,
Todd?
No. If I were to give you up to anybody, it would probably be to the Mouth of the South, Mr. Gwen Butler.
Oh, there we have it.
The Mouth of the South, Jersey. No, I don't know where he's from. Connecticut.
South Connecticut, yes. Well, Nick, you and I can be reached on social media at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. We do have the loneliest email addresses on the internet, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com. And we invite you, all three of us invite you to join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. That's where you can leave your thoughts on our shows, leave your thoughts on the world of comics in general, and we would be happy to discuss things with you on there. We do have a Twitter account that I don't think is active that often, PTBN Comics. And other than that, just let us know your thoughts on Shazam, the TV series, if you have memories of this, if you're experiencing it for the first time. What do you think the nature is of the mentor-Billy relationship? Let us know that. Let us know what your thoughts were on Shazam month. You know, we wrapped up yet another theme month. Do you enjoy the theme months? Do you enjoy it more when we mix things up? Let us know your thoughts on that. And with that being said, we're going to take a break. And when we come back on the other side, we've got reading and watching. We've got the rundown. We've got the wrestling minute. And, of course, we've got the latest hit from good old Jim Ross.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wingbar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Wow, Nick, we are back in the Hard Traveling Studios on exactly the same date that we were recording the first half of the show a few minutes ago.
Yeah, just a few minutes later, actually. We took a little break, got a little drink of water, swig of water for the working man, if you will. You know, listen to some of our advertisers so we could pay those gimmicks that come in the mail they call bills. Man, we hadn't made a Steve Austin podcast reference in what feels like a dog's age.
That's because Steve Austin hasn't recorded a podcast in what feels like a dog age.
Is that true? I don't know.
Yeah,
I just stopped listening.
He's been on a whoop-ass audio hiatus for quite some time now.
Well, you know, I hope that hiatus winds up being shorter than a. Never mind. I'm not going to go there.
Well, I for one hope that when he comes back, he forgets the very existence of. Ted Fowler 361. Is that his name?
At Teddy Fowler 361.
Holy mackerel. Talk about grinding a show to a halt. It's like when we talk about anything.
Teddy, tell me, what kind of ammunition are you shooting down there?
Well, Steve, now, Ted, I saw a buck the other day, but I held off on it because it was only a 6-point. What about you? What you been seeing out there?
Good Lord. Anyway.
We're going to do the Hard Traveling Hunting podcast, given our...
Yeah, it would be chock full of information. Well, you sit there and you just kind of wait. That's what you do. It's typically very early in the morning. And that's all there is to it, folks.
Usually it's cold.
Yeah, we just did the podcast. There it is. It's over.
Anyway, we are happy that you are still with us here on this undetermined date that we're recording this podcast. And as you just heard on the advertisements there, we got a lot of great shows here at Place to Be Nation. And in fact, just this week, Nick, I don't know if you've been following how things have been going around here, but
I feel like this is probably a week on the pop feed where I think, Greg, you know, I'm gonna go off script. I'm gonna predict that we had not very many things for just a couple of people.
Well, in fact, you'd be wrong.
Oh, Nick, wow!
If you were to make that suggestion, because we actually had a busy week pop feed with a little something for everyone.
Shut the front door.
Russell and Sam dish about the classic Empire Records in a new '90s to Nothing. Featuring the lovely Liv Tyler. She's not on the podcast, but they talk about her in the podcast, presumably.
Yes. Mm.
In this month's Talkin' Pop, Jenny and Tim welcome JT Rosero to relive the magic of WrestleMania weekend in New York City.
New York City.
Man. Pick up the pace.
Remember those? Yeah, there you
go. You know what's amazing, Nick? And this is going to make you feel special. David Sunday actually did that exact same bit with me on his podcast spontaneously.
Oh, there you go.
Great minds thinking alike.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that'll be a good listen. Ben Morse and Russell Sellers talk about the first half of 1970, a.k.a. Jeremy Reynolds' freshman year, in a new Marvel Age masterclass. That'll be an interesting discussion. Nick, what are you making of 1970 so far in the world of Marvel?
Well, not to tell tales out of school, but we actually finished up our discussion of 1970 with a new episode of the Marvel Age podcast, a new episode that for some reason is not listed on this here live. That's neither here nor there. So 1970 was a very good year in Marvel Comics, and we're looking forward to moving ahead into 1971, which will mark our first ever three-part episode.
Wow, and that will that not mark 10 coverage years of Marvel Age?
I think 70 gets it. 60, because technically we did 61 and 62 together, because Fantastic Four number one came out in November of 61. So if you count 61, what's that? 61, yeah, 70 would have been 10 years.
Well, one thing that hasn't been going for 10 years but is going to give people the same amount of joy and pleasure that they've had in the last 10 years of enjoying hoops is – that was a really stretched transition. But nonetheless, Adam and Andrew are here to deliver an in-depth preview.
What you could have said, Greg, you could have said one thing that hasn't been going on for 10 years but only feels like it has, the first round of the NBA playoffs, which you can hear all about. On the NBA Team podcast. See?
That's right. Playoff previews on a dual offering NBA Team podcast. Mm-hmm. Hear about how your team that isn't Golden State or Houston has no point of even playing in the Western Conference playoffs. Presumably that's what they'll talk about. And then the Eastern Conference is wide open, Nick. Could be any of four teams, really, that has a shot out in the East. So interested to hear what Adam and our buddy Andrew Reich have to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
Todd Weber and Timothy Capel look at Uncanny X-Men number 136. Plus, even more, in the latest episode of Conversation Comics. This is a great series, folks, that you need to check out. The Hard Traveling Fanboys, that's Greg and Nick, review Shazam.
Mm-hmm.
In the offering from the week before this one that you're listening to. So find that in the archives. Cowboy and D'Amato are back in the saddle, baby, with a new This Week in Sports. And they catch us up on everything since the Super Bowl.
Man.
I mean, God,
that's a lot of material.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Unfortunately, the Dolphins have been living life without the Super Bowl for many, many decades.
Mm.
Todd, welcome JT in to Binge Please as they talk the Netflix Marvel Universe and Daredevil Season 1. My favorite Daredevil season of the two that I've watched. So I just realized I haven't watched Season 3 yet.
You need to watch Season 3. It's excellent.
Todd also joined Andy to talk Swingers in the third episode of Laugh in Theater. You ever see Swingers, Nick?
It's been a while, but yes, I've seen it.
I've actually never seen it. I've never seen it. I want to go back and watch it at some point.
I was in high school when I saw it, so it's been, oh God, it's been at least 13 years at this point, so I remember very little of it.
I'm much higher on Vince Vaughn comedies now than I was back then,
mm-hmm.
So I probably would like it now. Coming up at the end of May, the Hard Traveling Fanboys will
That's
be wrapping up our Hard Travelers for Hire series with a special giant-sized edition of the podcast. Greg and Nick, us,
mm-hmm.
will be joined by past guests for a retrospective look at the highs and lows of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we want your opinions. That's right, you listening right now. After you've seen Endgame, send in your full ranking of the MCU movies from 1 through 22 to nickd@placetobenation.com, one of the two loneliest email addresses on the internet.
Also send them to gregp@placetobenation.com, but I typically do all the figuring on this here show whenever it's figuring time.
I ain't no mathematician. I'm here for my written word. That's why I've produced so much content for the site.
It was your understanding there would be no math.
Mm-hmm. The full composite rankings for Place to Be Nation will be revealed on the show, so get those ballots in and make your voice heard. Make it hurt. Wow. Nick, what's going on over at the Wrestling Feed?
Well, over at the Wrestling Feed, you know, Greg, there's a premiere episode of the new podcast, Making Towns with Friends, where Steve and Rich explore what could have been if a Money in the Bank match had occurred at every WrestleMania since inception. Now, does that mean every WrestleMania since Chris Nolan's inception? I don't know.
Right.
It's their own personal spin on the what if concept. And they may or may not have pitched that to us as an episode of What If that we may or may not have planning on doing for that What If show that we've done a couple of times. But that's not for us to say, quite frankly. Moving on, JT and Scott were joined by the manager, Todd Weber, for episode 517 of the Place to Be podcast, and they broke down the March 1989 MSG house show. Man, thrilling stuff there. Finally, JT and Jad returned to the new Wrestling War Zone as they finished off 1995 with a discussion about Starrcade.
Now, Starrcade 1995 mm-hmm. is notable for being a good Starrcade that doesn't involve which main event wrestler, Nick?
I'm not. Let's see here. I'm going to say 95. Doesn't involve Hogan.
That's correct. Well, Hulk Hogan, fulfilled all of his contractual obligations.
It was the New Japan Starrcade, right?
That's right. New Japan versus WCW.
Right. Are you trying to make some sort of point? Are you trying to make some sort of comment?
No,
are you
of
trying
course
to,
not.
Are you trying to cast some aspersions, Greg? Are you trying to inject our podcast with a bunch of typical live chat snark?
I would never do such a thing, Nick. I'm just making a point. I'm just saying that
What's your point?
Was headlined by Hulk Hogan and the Butcher. And the next year, Starrcade did not have Hulk Hogan anywhere on the card.
Was the Butcher on the card in 95?
No, the Butcher was not on the card.
We're not sitting here talking about the Butcher, are we?
We're not talking about the Butcher. No, we're not. That's a good point.
In any event, be sure to check out our social media pages and message board at bigelow34.proboards.com for information on joining our greatest WWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get out on the conversation today and start researching your list. Compile spreadsheets. Argue with Dave Meltzer on Twitter. It's the best way to start on this. And be sure to check with all your favorite, top tastemakers on Twitter to determine which matches make your list and which ones shouldn't. And finally, be sure to check out PlaceToBeNation.com as things are getting back up and running there with plenty of projects and reviews to come. Content will be picking back up in the days and weeks ahead.
Nick, how many Hulkster matches made your list?
I haven't submitted a list.
But I have heard through the grapevine you may have compiled a preliminary list.
There's a draft list, and then you know how many Hogan matches are on it. They're none of your business, Greg. We don't talk about people's voting preferences here on this show. We are apolitical whenever possible. Preliminarily, there might be a couple. LeBron James once said, not five, not six, not seven, not eight, not nine. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see where the number lands.
There might be a couple.
There might be.
Yeah.
What do you care? What of it? How many Bret Hart matches are going to be on your list?
We're not here to discuss that.
Well, see, that's an example of why we need new tastemakers, Greg, to help us overcome our own personal biases.
Right. You're damned right about that, Nick. I'm glad you can be honest about that. Because maybe I do overrate Bret Hart matches. Maybe instead of Bret Hart, I should focus on, I don't know, Gold Dust matches.
Gold Dust matches would be good.
Who else? I don't know. Somebody. I'm sure there's some Cassius Ohno matches I could talk about.
He is fat, so that probably makes it better.
He's a large man. Good wrestler, though.
Cue Todd Weber to talk about his whatever his metabolic condition is that makes him fat. I didn't say there's anything wrong with being fat. I just said he was fat. Hell, I'm fat.
Who else was fat? Was Bam Bam Bigelow, and
he was
good.
Awesome. Yeah,
I'm fat. On his head.
I'm fat, and I suck at most things. But that doesn't. I don't suck at most things because I'm fat. I just happen to also suck at most things.
Yes, and in fact, one could argue that the reason we're fat is because we suck at things.
Yeah, we just gave up a long time ago. Stop trying.
Exactly. You know, now that I'm almost bald, and you are bald, we should get flame tattoos on our head. Maybe
that's an awesome idea. You realize we've been back from the break for almost 15 minutes and haven't talked about a single thing of consequence.
No one cares about comics anymore, Nick. They're passé. It's over. We've moved on to other stuff now.
We're in a post-comics era of the podcast.
Yeah, you know, really, you know, post grunge happened in music, yeah. Post comics now in the HTF. Mm-hmm. We're here to talk about other things in pop culture that tickle our fancy. Let's talk about that Game of Thrones, huh? No, let's not. Oh, I've never watched any.
Let's talk about some Game of Thrones, man. How great is Game of Thrones?
It's picking up the pace, from what I understand from the Twitterverse and everything.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, whenever you finally carve out the time to watch it, I will be stunned if you don't just absolutely love it.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure I will.
And especially early on, there's a, you know, it. Let me just say, it hooks in you early. I'll put it that way. It gives you a reason to keep coming back, if you know what I mean.
And I know that it's a show after your heart and loins. In that, from what I understand, no character is safe from being brutally murdered.
No one is ever happy, and it's wonderful. It is the best thing. Like, pretty much the first episode, something terrible happens, and then it's nothing but a series of terrible things happening to people for 8 years. It's great. And there are tits and dragons along the way. I mean, what more can you ask for? Misery, tits, dragons. Those are like favorite, the three food groups.
My favorite childhood board game was actually Tits and Dragons.
Tits and Dragons.
It was a good one.
Mine was Misery and Tits, so it's interesting that we have that crossover.
Well, let's end this frivolous session and move on to our weekly look at the news and notes in the world of comic books, Nick. Mm-hmm. It's a segment known the country over. And by the country, I mean Canada, particularly Western Canada, over as The Rundown.
Welcome to The Rundown.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. It's The Rundown.
Yep.
And how else to start The Rundown?
How else, indeed?
But with a little look in the DC Universe.
Mm.
Particularly the DC Universe app.
Yes.
Like how I stretched that out there?
Not really.
Well, you better learn to love it, pal, because it's the best thing today.
Best thing going today. There it is.
Now, production on DC Universe's Swamp Thing unexpectedly shut down this past week.
Hmm.
As the show will be shortened from a planned 13 episodes down to 10 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this initially sparked a lot of concern about the future of the DC Universe app due to websites speculating. However, mm-hmm. a report came out just a few days ago saying that DC Universe's app is safe, that it is performing above expectations, and that this was a, quote, creative decision,
mm.
whatever that means. So, here's the thing that happened. They cut it down to 10 episodes instead of 13. That's a short season, in my opinion. And I would think that from a creative standpoint, well, there better have a very compelling reason to do it because
presumably you're telling
rather than an episodic story, you're telling a serial story, mm-hmm. like an ongoing story,
right.
Presumably.
Yeah, and it's especially concerning because the follow-up reports that came out were that they were still in production on the final episode, and they had to heavily rewrite the final episode while they were making it to make the season come to a close in a satisfactory fashion. So that instantly has me concerned that Swamp Thing will suffer from the same thing that I thought Titan suffered from at times, which was pacing issues, like where
condensation at times and
yes,
yeah,
just strong stretches of nothing happening and too many stretches of too many things happening at one time, like just a poorly paced show, in my opinion, is what Titans was. Titans had a lot of great things in the first season, but I think pacing was not one of them. And this instantly has me worried it's going to be more of the same.
Yeah, I had the same thought. Even though I like Titans more than you did, I had the same issues with some of the pacing, and that was my initial thought on this. I mean, it does create some level of concern that Swamp Thing could turn into Swamp Ass.
Mm. What about Strutting That Ass?
Oh, if only we had a movie about Strutting That Ass. Now, see, I don't have such an attachment to a character, Nick, that I'm not willing to have that character put in a situation mm-hmm. where it reenacts Strutting mm-hmm. That Ass.
Okay.
Strutting That
then
Ass.
Let me propose then that for the
Strutting That Ass.
For the new Green Lantern movie that apparently is never going to come out, that the Lantern Oath be replaced with Strutting That Ass, Strutting That Ass, Strutting That Ass.
Strutting That Ass.
Mm-hmm.
Strutting That Ass. I'm good with it.
No,
just imagine
you
it.
You say that.
He takes it out.
You say that.
He sticks the ring into the lantern. into the lantern, and he says to himself,
"Now if it's Doibie Dickles saying strutting that ass,
you strutting that ass,"
that turns it around.
Green Lantern, I seen you strutting that ass.
Oh, perfect. Lord.
Anyway, let's stick with DC Comics, shall we?
Sure.
Let's move over to The Suicide Squad, which is written and shall be directed by none other than one.
It'll be directed by James Gunn and one other person yet to be named. There was three of them, Greg. There was James Gunn, Sean Gunn, and Gunn.
Oh my god.
We were talking about on Marvel Age the other night. We were talking about Avengers 83, which takes place at the Rutland Halloween Parade. And I could go into a long discussion of what the Rutland Halloween Parade, what the significance of it.
Related to Patty Rutland Jazz?
No. But the point is, Tim said something like, this is one of the most up-its-own-ass comics I think I've ever read. And I was like, oh, so it's like the comic book version of the HTF podcast. And he was like, well, yeah, kind of. It definitely has an audience that it's made for that isn't necessarily the broadest thing in the world. And I was like, yeah, because our podcast is really made for an audience of two. So
let me tell you the sad thing, Nick. I tweeted out our podcast last week where we were talking about reviewing The Power of Shazam by the legendary writer artist Jerry Ordway.
Oh god!
And imagine my surprise when I logged onto Twitter the next day and saw a like from one Jerry Ordway.
Oh no, Jerry, we know you're not listening anymore, but we're going to retroactively apologize for anything we may have said or done or not said or not done. Our bad.
And especially for our in jokes that only two, our audience of two approach to podcasting.
You know, we have a lot of in jokes that I think we've repeated so often on the show that other people kind of have against their will had it beaten into them through osmosis. But the Jack Michaels, Michael Michaels, and Shawn Michaels thing, like no being would even have the basis of knowledge to understand why that is funny. And so the obvious thing to do is to sit here and talk about it for 10 more minutes.
And quite honestly, the thing that makes it the most funny, you have to have seen that table with the Admiral.
Admiral
and this guy
and the damn oxygen tank.
And the woman, the woman that always dressed more seductively than she should have.
No, you always get those two mixed up. That was a different table.
That was a different table?
Yes.
Who was the one at that table?
The woman at that table was just some old, you know, haggard-looking woman. The woman you're talking about actually worked at the post office with my dad.
Oh. Well, so you might have had familiarity with her.
No, I had no familiarity with her.
Oh. Well, in any event, let's move on to James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, shall we?
Maybe. Let's see how far we get this time.
Wrestler and actor John Cena is reportedly in talks to join the cast of James Gunn's The Suicide Squad, according to Variety. Now, his role has not been revealed. However, speculation is that he is taking Dave Bautista's place as the Peacemaker character. Now, I don't know much about Peacemaker, and I don't know much about
history.
You know. I don't know much trigonometry either, but I do know that I love Dave, and I was hoping for him in this movie. However, John Cena has been nothing short very good in every movie role that I've seen him in to this point, so especially comedies. So I'm actually good with this, Nick. I'd like to have Dave in there, but if Dave can't do it for some reason and they need to get another guy, I'm fine with John Cena getting this shot.
Let's see what he's got. Yeah, I mean, I would have rather had Dave as well just because he's more of a proven commodity in my eyes, but hey, sure. If James Gunn's got faith in him, then we should have faith in him as well.
Agreed. And he's done a good job. I liked him in that movie. What was that? What was that Amy Schumer movie called?
Trainwreck.
Trainwreck. Yes, that was a very good movie.
Good Lord.
What?
I'm looking at red carpet pictures from the Avengers premiere. Never mind. Move on.
Spider-Man. is a movie that's coming out, Spider-Man Far From Home, right? Coming out after Avengers, the next Marvel movie, after Endgame. And the release date, in fact, Nick, has been moved up 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
It will now come out, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, on Tuesday,
mm-hmm.
July 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, according to this here article, this strategic move puts it in theaters before the U.S. Independence Day holiday,
mm-hmm.
Which for those of you that don't live in America, maybe in New Zealand or somewhere like that, Independence Day celebrates the day that we won our liberty from France.
Yeah, if you live in the UK, it celebrates the day that we kicked your ass. That's what it celebrates. So there you go for all our British listeners.
Every day on Independence Day, every American has to eat half a gallon of pudding as a tradition.
Mm, it's called. It is the Carl Grimes hour of our Independence Day.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it will also be one day ahead of. I have no idea what this term means, Nick. What is A24's Midsommar?
It's a movie. A24 is a studio. Midsommar is a movie of some sort, I'm assuming. But I know for sure that A24 is a studio.
Well, this change is reflected on Sony's website, but is yet to be updated on Marvel and ticket retailers' platforms. So, basically, we're going to get to see this movie a little bit earlier than anticipated. And what's going to be great, Nick, is if local movie theaters incorporate this in their $5 Tuesdays or whatever mm-hmm. that we have down in Dothan. So, wouldn't that be something?
That would be something. I'm off that entire week as well. So get to see that at some point. I'm
looking. Oh, you're going to be in Chicago, right?
What?
Or was that last year?
I went to Chicago for a Georgia game 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yes.
But I thought you were planning just a regular general trip there.
No, you have me confused with someone else.
That's not possible.
It is, and we'll move on.
Oh, well. Live and learn.
Yeah.
Hey, remember Vince Russo?
No.
He was a prominent writer in the professional wrestling industry. Some controversy has followed him wherever he's gone in his career. Anyway, apparently there are two brothers that are not related to him, named Russo brothers. Joe and Anthony Russo. Yeah. Tony Russo is his friends calling.
Oh,
they man. Are working on a documentary film about the legendary Marvel Comics creator Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Stan Lee passed away tragically. Well, not tragically. He just passed away last year.
He was just old.
He was old. You know, it wasn't a tragedy necessarily.
That's what happens to people when you get that old. You just die one day.
But it's sad. But it's sad.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it sucks.
We all love Stan Lee. Nonetheless, the Russos are working on this documentary about his life and times. And when you combine the Russos' love of Marvel with a topic as lively and interesting as Stan Lee, and think about all the stuff that he must have seen and experienced in his 90-plus years, this is a pretty exciting project, Nick. Would you agree?
It is. It is pretty exciting. I wonder what the take on it is. Is it going to be just a straight telling of his life story, or is it going to focus in on particular aspects or eras or what have you? I'm interested to see what the focus is. Because if you're trying to tell the entire, like, Stan from childhood through death, that's a pretty long story. It deserves a lot of real estate. So I'm interested to see how they go about it.
Well, one thing that I'm excited to see how they go about,
mm-hmm.
and by they, I mean Marvel. I'm excited to see how Marvel goes about Thor 4, because Thor Ragnarok actress Tessa Thompson, the lovely and wonderful Tessa Thompson, who played Valkyrie in the film, says that talks have taken place for a fourth Thor movie with the lovely and talented director Taika Waititi discussed to return.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Chris Hemsworth has been hankering to work with Taika Waititi again,
mm-hmm.
crediting him for returning his exuberance for the Marvel franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nick, how excited are you for Thor 4?
Moderately.
Very good. I'm extremely excited.
I am moderately excited for this proposed version of Thor 4. If it were another proposed version, a version that perhaps did not involve Taika Waititi, or perhaps a version that was,
a version that wasn't entertaining.
Oh my God. There we go. There it is. There it is, Greg. Can't be entertaining. There's never been any entertaining Thor comics because they weren't comedies. They weren't out and out slapstick. So they weren't entertaining as a result, right?
Thor comics weren't comedies. Interesting.
Pure comedies?
I would say that Ragnarok wasn't pure comedy.
I would say that you're full of doo-doo shit then. And you are seeking simply to argue for the sake of arguing.
It leaned heavily on the comedy. It was very effective.
If you had to pick one genre, what genre would you put it in?
It would be action comedy.
Oh my God, you're so full of shit.
It's an action comedy. What? The action in that movie is better than the action in most other Marvel movies. Would you argue with that?
I would have to think about the other Marvel movies. My point is, it's primarily a comedy. Can we agree on that point?
Yes, it leans heavily into
it. It is primarily a comedy. Can we agree on that point? It's a yes or no question, for God's sake.
I guess we can agree with that, yes.
Can you just say yes or no?
Not for me to say.
It's not for you to say. My point is, you could make an Infinity War movie that isn't primarily a comedy.
And you can make one that isn't primarily up its own ass and depressing.
Oh, God. What was up its own ass? What's ever been up its own ass in the Marvel Universe? Nothing.
Nothing. It just forces our constant comparisons of things force you to dig in. But I would rather watch Ragnarok 5 more times than watch The Dark World once again.
Okay. What you are doing is taking a Warner Brothers like approach. This one didn't work, so let's do the far opposite thing instead of learning lessons from this one thing.
No, but the difference in Warner Brothers and this is that this far out approach worked.
Oh.
It worked. It injected life.
It worked for you.
It did. That's exactly right. It's all I can speak for is me.
That's right. And all I hear is me, and I would like to see something, a Thor movie that realizes the potential of the printed page.
Well, one thing's for certain. Jane Foster has not yet realized the potential character on the printed page. I think.
How would you know? You don't read it.
That's a great point. I'm taking your word for it, Nick. I'm trusting your impeccable judgment on things.
Mm.
As a taste, you're a tastemaker in the comic book world, Nick.
Well,
don't make me go searching for tastemakers.
I should bitch at Brian Cronin on on Twitter.
Jane Foster.
Oh, what are the odds of us catching shit for this podcast, by the way?
Oh, pretty high.
Yeah.
Jane Foster has changed from Thor to Valkyrie. This is not the story I thought it was going to be. I see. All right. Well, I was thinking we were going to do a story about Natalie Portman being on the Avengers red carpet. But
no,
it's appropriate
it's
that we're not
a story about
that.
A comic.
So, new details of Marvel Comics' upcoming Valkyrie ongoing series have been revealed to Marvel.com, including... Are you ready for this, Nick?
Yeah, I'm ready.
The identity of the hero taking on the mantle of the fabled guide to departed heroes. I didn't even know that was her deal. And that hero is...
No, you wouldn't know that, Greg, because you only watched Ragnarok.
Foster. Well. Oh, well.
I'm just...
I bet you don't know the history of Talkie Tawny, do you?
No, I don't.
Neither do I.
No, I don't.
I don't either. Now...
What's that have to do with anything?
Because you've only seen the movie. And a few other things. That hero, Nick, is none other than Jane Foster, who previously took on the mantle of Thor until her apparent death, and the return of the name Thor to the Odinson.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we all know, Nick, Foster has been seen alive and well in War of the Realms, cancer-free mortal.
We are certain of that.
Including in this week's War of the Realms number 2, well, this will be last week's, in which the classic Valkyrie, Brunhilde, apparently died.
Oh.
Anyway, Al Ewing and Jason Aaron are co-writing this, and what are your thoughts on this way of kind of keeping Jane Foster in the forefront of Marvel while not having her be Thor?
Excellent idea. The character of Valkyrie is one that I would say is decidedly like C-list in the Marvel pantheon. This is a way to raise the character's profile by attaching the momentum of the Jane Foster push of the last few years to it. Keeps Jane in the role, like you said, without having her be Thor. And hell of a creative team. Jason Aaron is... He has said that Al Ewing will be the primary writer, but Al Ewing did an outstanding Loki solo series a few years back. So he knows this mythology very well. He's a very good writer. He's kind of my preferred choice to take over whenever the day does come that Jason Aaron steps away. But all these things sound good to me. I'm for this. And by for this, I mean I may or may not at some point in the future read it on Marvel Unlimited. Let's be honest, probably not.
And what better way to end the rundown than on that note? Well, you know what that means, Nick.
What does it mean, Greg?
It means that this is time, that it is time, and this is time for our weekly segment where we talk about the things that we've been reading and watching. It is a segment known the world over as Reading and Watching. Nick, what you been reading?
Nothing.
You know, I don't have anything either.
But we got an arsenal watching for you.
We have so much watching; it is ridiculous. Where should we start? Where should we begin?
Wherever you want. You're the one who's been doing nothing but watching comic book properties for the last week.
Oh, sweet sassy molassy. Let's start. Let's start on the CW network, shall we? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the CW shows. Now, I have not caught up yet on Supergirl. As you know, Nick, I'm mm-hmm. still several episodes behind. However, mm-hmm. I started the process of catching up. Mm-hmm. So what I watched this past week was the debut episode of John Cryer as Lex Luthor. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a very good episode of Supergirl. I was stunned. I was shocked. I was flabbergasted. In other Stephen A. Smith words, by what I witnessed, I hoodwinked. I mean, it was a really good episode. I thought Cryer did a good job of portraying Lex. For the most part, the writing of Lex was good. I actually, for a brief moment, bought into his sympathetic act. Briefly, because I thought they'd stretch it out for an episode or two before revealing that he was tricking her. The big swerve was done very, very well at the end.
Well, you liked some of that, didn't you?
I did. I really liked me some of that. I love the revelation of Otis. And I feel like the episode's far enough in the past I mentioned him.
And
but,
Otis and?
Miss Tessmacher!
Yep, I knew you would... I know you'd pop for that.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah, finally that character's purpose was revealed, because that character seemingly had no purpose, but to their credit, they had a long game and they played it. And it worked, and it was good. And the whole episode was very, very strong. I'm excited to see where it leads, and I did appreciate the little musical cue from the Donner Superman movies at the end with the Lex as the bombs were going off in the courtyard. So good stuff all around there.
Glad to hear it.
Well, let's move on to our CW show of choice, Arrow, on Monday nights, which of course is now paired together with Legends of Tomorrow for mm-hmm. one hell of a combination. Mm-hmm. Well, this past week's episode, mm-hmm. This past season, past week, yes, this past mm-hmm. week's episode, not last night's episode, but nonetheless, was an episode.
We've only been doing it this way for, yes. God, Greg, I don't know, 6 months now.
This was an episode all really about Black Sun, Laurel Lance from uh-huh. Earth's Hue.
Yep.
And in particular, her regressing back to a life of crime as she teams back up with the Arrowverse version of the Shadow Thief. Character that I believe was featured on Batman the Animated Series in a pretty good episode back in the our Ute. This sets up a conflict between Felicity and Dinah, as Dinah wants to throw the book at Laurel, and Felicity wants to give her a chance to reform again.
Throw the
and,
book at. This sounds like a 1940s gangster podcast, throw the book at.
She wants to throw the book at her, see? but unfortunately, Dinah and the cop is unable to apprehend her in time. So they draw upon a guest from another CW show to come on and lend a helping hand. That guest is none other than Sarah Lance, the captain of the Wave Rider over on Legends of Tomorrow. Sarah shows up, and we get a pretty kick-ass confrontation between all three Black Canaries, really, if you think about it, with an Earth 2 version of Laurel, the Sarah Lance White Canary, and Dinah Lance's current Black Canary. And a funny thing happens. By the end of the episode, it turns into almost a backdoor pilot or a Birds of Prey or series, does it not?
I suppose. I got to be honest here. I was very tired when I watched this, and it didn't hold my interest, so I was kind of nodding off here and there throughout the episode. So I remember like the basic gist of it, but I couldn't really discuss with you the finer points. And I know that's the hard-hitting analysis you've come to expect from the hard-traveling fanboys.
Well, essentially, it comes down to the end. They talk Laurel out of her.
Yep, stance. I remember that part.
And Laurel, Dinah, Sarah, and Felicity end up taking on Shadow Thief and taking her down her plans.
And then meanwhile, and Sarah reconcile at the grave, and then they're going to flash forward and all that. Yep, I got you.
Joe's doll looks like Joe. And they fight. Oliver and Diggle, meanwhile, discover one of the long gunners from earlier in the season
Kodiak, right?
And manage to torture him and get some information. And other than that, in the future, meanwhile, we see the future of what happens with Dinah and company, and we learn that they're all part of this group called the Canaries that Dinah sends out, which works sort of in a Birds of Prey kind of fashion. So that's kind of cool too, the Canaries. Because I've read some rumors that potentially a Black Canary show of some kind, whether it be Birds of Prey or otherwise, could happen at some point. So
I wouldn't think that would be very likely though, given the Batwoman.
Right. I felt the same thing.
Bring those over to be supporting characters. That's possible, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But.
So that was Arrow. Legends of Tomorrow featured a whole lot of libido.
A whole lot of fucking going on.
That's right. So that's what I get for trying to skirt the line of what I was saying there. But nonetheless, Legends of Tomorrow did introduce the Hindu god of love making?
The Hindu god of fucking. I don't know.
And this episode turns into a
Kamadeva. Kamadeva.
A quest, if you will, to stop Kamadeva from marrying Zari, who of course has feelings for Ray that we learned in the last episode.
No, not Ray.
Not Ray. Nate.
Yes.
Sorry. And this is going at the same time as Nate's dad, Hank's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And Nate is going through his issues that he has with his dad and whether to expose all of his corrupt behavior and what the secrets were behind those. So let's talk about the Kamadeva plot first. This, of course, manifests itself in Kamadeva spreading his magic dust around the Wave Rider and causing everyone to have intense sexual thoughts.
Yes.
Clearly. So everyone is either having sex or thinking about having sex.
Yep, Ray and Nora. Nora, who's been snuck onto the Wave Rider, they're having sex. Isn't her name Nora?
Yep. I think. Yep, Nora. Not Nora West Allen, but Nora.
Yep, Nora Dark. Not Nora Freeze, not Nora West Allen, Nora Dark.
Nora Dark.
Mm-hmm.
And a shirtless Ray seduces her in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was rather...
Now, here's my one complaint, Greg. You know, this episode, it's got all these sexual feelings, and then Zari ends it with kind of this big musical number. It's like a Bollywood-themed deal. But sure. I think they missed an opportunity for her to have a musical number where she goes, come on, come on, Nate, come on, comma, you don't have to fight. Hot dog.
I feel lucky tonight. A fictional threesome between those three takes place. And Dwight Yoakam and Lyle Lovett have to just watch on in agony.
Mm-hmm. Cry and touch themselves in the corner or touch each other in the corner, whichever.
Who knows, man? Yeah. Who knows, man?
It's not for us to say what kind of action those two sex pots had going on.
Did you know that Ray Palmer, who's played by Brandon Routh, and Nora, who's played by someone else, they are married in real life?
Really? I did not.
Yeah, they are married in real life. Oh, so they probably were looking forward to getting it on the Wave Rider. But it ends. And I'll be honest with you, I thought this sequence kind of saved the episode for me in some regards. The Bollywood music number at the end was just classic Legends. Mm-hmm. Only Legends can pull this off.
Yep.
So that was good. There is actually a great scene, the most powerful scene. You're getting all this comedy, and then they drop this incredibly powerful scene on you with Nate dealing with his father's death. And kind of coming to the realization that at the end of the day, his dad was complicated, but that he did love him. Mm-hmm. And so there was this great kind of heart-wrenching scene where Nate realizes he's never going to have that conversation with him, but kind of comes to terms with how everything was. So that was kind of cool. So, overall, I thought this saved itself and turned into a good episode. Now, your thoughts on that, Nick?
On the stuff?
Just the episode in general.
Oh, it was great. I love the episode. From pretty much from beginning to end. The only aspect of the show, episode I didn't like were was the Mona stuff.
Yes.
But I've made my thoughts on that character.
Yes. Well, and so, by the way, I initially put up some resistance to the anti-Mona talk. Not strong resistance.
Just to argue. Not even because you felt that way.
Well, I didn't mind Mona for a while, but it's become increasingly apparent, Nick, that she's sinking the show when she's on it. And I don't know, I'm not blaming her. Sure she's very talented. It is a character that I have lost patience with.
The problem with the character is this, Greg. It is a character who solely exists to be quirky. But the character solely exists to be quirky on a show that is filled with quirk. You don't need any more. Like,
everybody's quirky on the Wave Rider.
It's redundant point. If that's the only hook to her character, then there is no character.
Yep. So. And she is actively annoying now. She's actively making me lose interest in the show when she's on there. And couple that with some of the worst CGI that you will ever see in your life in these transformation sequences. Mm-hmm. I laugh out loud at a scene that's not supposed to be funny when she gets mad and transforms. It just looks so stupid. I want her gone, Nick. I want her gone. And I know you want Gary gone as well.
Both of them.
I'm not as anti-Gary, but if I have to lose Gary to lose Mona, so be it. So be it. All right, now, let's move on, shall we, to The Flash. Tuesday night's episode of The Flash, which brought us the origin story of Nora after all this time. So Iris actually lets Nora out and gives her a chance to explain herself. And, you know, this comes after, of course, they start reading her diary.
Yeah, there you go.
So in the process, we kind of flash back to the future to see her story of the real story of how this whole thing came to be this season. We in the process, we get introduced to this new speedster villain, Godspeed, who ends up kind of being a bit of a throwaway. Mm-hmm. He does cause a lot of pain for her. He's sort of her reverse Flash because of the personal loss that he causes her. Mm-hmm. But he's disposed of rather easily by the end of the episode. But it's about him. It's about the pain that he causes her and about why she goes to Eobard Thawne and kind of their weird relationship. So it's all about telling that story, telling the reasoning why she made all the decisions that she made. Barry still doesn't trust her at the end of the episode. However, the rest of the team seems more sympathetic to her situation. So At the end of this episode, we get a great scene, which just reinforces my opinion, which has been less Chris Klein, more Eobard Thawne, please.
Yes. Sadly, I worry that with the return to that
Cicada's back front and center. Cicada's
going to come back front and center.
Yeah, and
they're running out of real estate, so I'm worried that ultimately it is going to be a big Cicada thing near the end.
That scene, though, with Barry and Eobard at the end was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And once again, just allow me to say, fuck Warner Brothers for thinking that Grant Gustin can't act in a movie
right
as the Flash. The dude's a fantastic actor.
Agreed completely.
So, anyway, I thought a really strong episode, Nick. What did you think?
I liked it a lot. Loved it.
All right, let's rank them.
Oh, I didn't watch Supergirl this week, nor did you for that matter. So I will go Flash, Legends, Arrow.
I will go Flash, Arrow, Legends.
Wow.
Yes, I liked Arrow this week quite a bit, but Legends I thought needed – I was losing Legends in the plot when they were back in the 1800s with Jane Austen stuff. I was not super interested in that, but – once they did the Bollywood number, that's when the episode grabbed me. So yeah, but they're good. A really good week, I thought, for the CW shows. I am hoping, I will admit, to get a heavily Oliver focused episode of Arrow coming up soon.
I think we will.
But let's move on from that to other stuff we've been watching. Have you been watching anything, Nick?
Not that I can recall, other than freshening up on MCU stuff in preparation for Endgame, which we'll be discussing on this very podcast next week.
Ooh. Way to tease the audience there.
Mm.
Tease the audience with a little future content.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I've watched quite a bit. I had some free time over the weekend, some rare, completely free time, and I decided to watch a little bit of comic book media. Anyway, so one of the things that I watched, Nick, is the brand new DC animated movie, if you've mm-hmm. heard of it. Mm-hmm. It is called Justice League versus the Fatal Five. And this is a movie that tells the origin story of Green Lantern Jessica Cruz and also ties into the Legion of Superheroes. So it's really introducing audiences in many ways to two different DC concepts that they may not be familiar with. That of Jessica Cruz, that of the Legion, which we've talked about before, can be extremely intimidating to those who don't have an existing knowledge of them. So I will be the first to admit that despite the title, you may think going in this is a Legion movie. It's really not. There's only one Legion character who factors prominently into this movie, and it's the character Starboy. The Fatal Five, of course, factor heavily into it, and they are Legion villains. But it's really a Jessica Cruz movie, first and foremost. And I ended up loving this, because this is from the same creative team and involves many of the same voice actors from the classic Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. And indeed, this actually feels like a true successor to Justice League Unlimited. The animation style is the same. The voices are Kevin Conroy as Batman, Susan Eisenberg as Wonder Woman, and George Newbern as Superman. And it kind of goes with that Justice League Unlimited approach, Nick, where you would get teams of the core seven heroes who were paired with new heroes. So in this case, you get the Trinity, and they're paired off with Mr. Terrific, and Miss Martian, who is a nerd they introduced in this movie as well, and Jessica Cruz, Green Lantern. So it's kind of that same Justice League Unlimited approach to the team, and it ends up going all over the DC universe to various places, the future, the present. We even end up going to a Green Lantern movie, breaks out briefly, or maybe not so briefly. I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't seen it, but It's got a little bit of everything in it. Green Lantern combat, a great hook on Jessica Cruz. They don't do the what I thought they would do with Jessica's origin, in that they don't tell it from exactly the beginning, but they kind of fill you in on the details, and you skip the process of her learning what the Green Lantern Corps is and all that stuff. She already knows. And most excitingly for me is that it sets the stage potentially for a Green Lantern sequel if they wanted to do that, which they probably won't. But overall, very, very good. Awesome to hear Kevin Conroy as Batman, as always. George Newbern as Superman. Eisenberg as Wonder Woman. They were all wonderful. And the only issues that I really had with this movie is the fate of one character bothered me because they kind of left it up in the air. And there are a couple of dialogue moments that don't work for me. One of them is Batman referring to one of the villains. He says, "Bring it, Skeletor," which is a weird line coming from Batman to me, just because I'm not sure how Batman would have ever encountered the character of Skeletor on, you know, I don't know if He-Man is a thing in the DC universe. I guess maybe it is, but as a TV show or something. But the other line that really bothered me was the Green Lantern Salak, who is very businesslike, dropping the term fart nuggets when he's put in a dangerous situation. So, but other than that, great, man. Most of the dialogue's outstanding. Jessica Cruz is a great, great character, and I'm glad that this movie will expose a new audience to her. So that was awesome. Hopefully you can watch it soon, Nick.
I will. I'll hope to do that at some point.
And in addition to that, I caught another episode of Young Justice Outsiders on the DC Universe platform. And this was an episode titled Home Fires. Actually, no, I take that back. I actually watched two episodes of Young Justice Outsiders. The first was called Triptych. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Maybe not. Nonetheless, we get another – I don't want to spoil too much about this episode because you haven't seen it, but it's a great episode where – it's almost told in a non-linear kind of Tarantino-like fashion where we're jumping around the timeline to tell this story over the course of a few days from different characters' perspectives to sort of put the whole narrative together. Thought it was very effective. I did come across one character redesign that I'm not super pumped about, which is the Shade, just because I think his comic book character is one of the best designs in DC. But nonetheless, even despite that, his powers are awesome, as they always are. And we get some really cool building for future stuff here. It reminded me in some ways, Nick, of that Cadmus season of Justice League Unlimited, but before it really kicks into gear, like when you're building towards it and there are decisions being made by certain characters that you know are going to backfire.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of feels that way. So, and then the other episode was called Home Fires, and it is the Young Justice debut of Lobo as he comes to Earth to go after the character of Forager. And it's just I don't want to spoil anything about this. It's just terrific. It's outstanding. They do not depower Lobo. I'll put it that way. And we also get a plot where Ocean Master is seeking revenge on those who have wronged him by hunting down the wives and children of superheroes. So that's another one to keep in mind. Which, yes, Young Justice is a show, Nick, where superheroes are allowed to have wives and children.
And bad things are allowed to happen, and people are allowed to be upset about it, which I know that you hate when that happens.
No, I mean, I was personally waiting for a Bollywood dance routine to break out in this episode, but it didn't happen. Maybe the next episode. So, in addition to that, I also went and rewatched a movie which I've seen before. It is on the DC Universe platform, and it is Superman Shazam! The Curse of Black Adam. This is an animated DVD that was released by DC, probably about a decade ago, maybe a little bit more recently. Recently, that, maybe 2010 or so, and it features a 20 minute roughly original story called The Return of Black Adam that introduces Captain Marvel. It is, stop me if you've heard this, Nick, it's an origin story of Captain Marvel slash Shazam.
No, I wouldn't know anything about those.
And involves him interacting with Black Adam and Superman interacting with the both of them. Great story. really good stuff across the board here. Jerry O'Connell as Captain Marvel, to me, works a lot better than Jerry O'Connell as Superman, even though he was great in Death of Superman and Return of Superman. But yeah, he's just a perfect Captain Marvel, and the pacing is awesome, the animation is fantastic, and it's just a great story that they tell here. But then that ends, and on the back end of this are attached three shorts called DC Showcase Presents. And to me, these are real gems in this, because that was a very good story. That was a good Captain Marvel story. But these are like spectacular. The first of them is The Spectre. And it is done in a way that you would not have expected before you see the movie. But once you see it, I can't unsee The Spectre like this now, because it's done in like a 1970s grindhouse style with like crackly film and everything. And it has like a 70s funk soundtrack in the background. It is so cool. You have to see this short. It is unlike anything DC Animation has made before or since. The second one is Green Arrow. And this is a more traditional Justice League style episode with Green Arrow trying to foil an attempt by Vertigo and Merlin to assassinate the young princess of a foreign country. And it also gives us the Green Arrow Black Canary couple, and I don't want to spoil what happens at the end here, but you know, it's stuff that you probably won't be seeing in the comics anytime soon. And then the finale of this might be the best one of all, and it is Thomas Jane as Jonah Hex. As we get a in typical Jonah Hex comic book fashion, we get a snippet story from just a random time in Jonah Hex's life where he wanders into a town looking for a bounty, and things go awry, and he gets his revenge. We'll put it that way. So I enjoyed this so much, Nick. It's been probably 6 or 7 years since I watched it, and it was great. It was just a terrific watch.
Yeah, I remember watching this several years ago and enjoying it at the time, but I haven't seen it in some time, so maybe I'll refresh myself at some point.
Mm-hmm. And other than that, I think that's it. I don't think I've watched anything else. If I have, it,
good Lord.
Not occurring.
I don't know
right
how
now.
You had time with all that.
Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been a lot, and wrestling too. Mm-hmm. But it's nice, Nick. It's nice to have some time to do stuff.
I wouldn't know what that feels like. In any event.
Well, that's the end of reading and watching. And with that being said, I guess that brings us to the wrestling minute. Well, the Superstar Shakeup, which we were so excited about last week, came and went, and then came and went again.
Yeah, what a weird set of circumstances that was.
Yeah, I mean, certainly superstars change shows, and sometimes change shows twice. Mm-hmm. In the case of Andrade, Aleister Black, and Zelina Vega, mm-hmm. who all moved back to SmackDown after previously moving to Monday Night Raw. Samoa Joe moved to Raw off camera, which we expected, given the Finn Balor move. And overall, I think both shows had good talent acquisitions. I would say that if one show won over the other, I think Raw probably had the better haul in the talent acquisitions, getting the Usos, AJ Styles, and Ricochet.
Mm-hmm.
I think SmackDown, yeah, and Joe. SmackDown, it's probably its best tag team in the Usos, and also lost the Bar due to Sheamus' injury. Cesaro was shipped off to Monday Night Raw off camera. So, you know, SmackDown's tag division is kind of hurting right now, especially with Big E being hurt. Mm-hmm. The New Day's out of the picture, seemingly. Yep. So,
and the rumor right now is that Jeff Hardy might be hurt as well. So just a series of
circumstances for
the old SmackDown tag division.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about SmackDown right now, my beloved SmackDown. But Raw, I have to say, week one post shakeup, Raw did pretty well, in my opinion. I enjoyed this week's episode quite a bit. Two really strong matches, one in particular with AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, and Samoa Joe, which we could have had last year, but just has never happened, and ended up being one hell of a match.
Yep, it was. It was. It was a good episode of Raw. I enjoyed it very much, and I'm looking forward to see what if the new additions breathe some life into the show, which has been struggling for the last several months, it feels like.
Yes, totally agree. Well, with that being said, folks, that's been the Wrestling Minute. Oh, and I didn't tell you how I found out it was the Wrestling Minute this week. Yes, I looked at the LCD clock that we have recently had installed in our desks here in the L-shaped studio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
That's absolutely right. But it's time to end this show, as we do every week, with a little musical number from WWE Hall of Famer Jim Ross. And, you know, for those of you who pay attention to Jim Ross, I think people know that, who listen to our show anyway, know that we're a big fan of good old JR's podcasts. He's got a lot of irons in the podcasting fire. And it was recently announced a few weeks back that he's adding another one. He's going to be teaming up with noted Southern product Conrad Thompson to do a retrospective podcast tentatively titled Grillin' JR. So, Mr. Ross, I know you're excited about this upcoming venture for you, and I thought, what better way to welcome you to the Conrad Thompson family than to do a little number that the flagship program in that network has kind of become known for?
Well, thank you once again, Nick, for having me on here. You know, a lot of rumors out there on the internet about my relationship with Conrad Thompson. You know, nothing's official, nothing's been signed. I have spent a few days at the Conradison, you know, having a few adult beverages, as you do. You know, I think that's fine. Two friends can get together and have some adult beverages and not talk business, not talk shop. That being said, the show starts here in the next couple of weeks, Nick. So, with all that being said, I felt like to get things off on the right foot, I need to listen to Bruce's show a little bit. You know, old Brucey. He's got some good stories to tell. Some of them true, some of them false. But he's got some good stories to tell. And one of the stories he likes to tell is how he likes to go out and sing karaoke with a man that I signed. A man that I hired, a man that I fired multiple times. Double J, Jeff Jarrett. Talented man. Talented man in this business. Talented wife. I like wife of his, Nick. Now, Karen Jarrett and Jeff Jarrett were at my live show, Nick, in Orlando. Were you there?
I was there, actually, yes.
And what did you make of Miss Jarrett's comments on that show?
Oh, they were certainly unique, JR. What did you make of them?
Well, I think everybody's got a right to their opinion. It's not for me to say. You know, this is exactly the problem with millennials. You ask them a question, and they respond with more questions. They don't want to take a stand one way or the other. They don't want to make up their mind and just settle on something. They want to ride the fence. And again, maybe they don't do that at all. Maybe that's not what they do. It's not for me to say. Anyway, here's the song. Goes a little something like this. A little bit of fill in the background here now. It's my day working hard on the go. But the hands on the clock keep spinning too slow. Cause I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. You know, my baby has got me wrapped around her little old finger. Cause she knows that I'd walk through hell and back just to be with it. You know, the big red machine Kane once put me straight to hell and burned my ass. And I told him he was burning my ass. I'm not afraid to tell a man if he's doing something wrong. And he wasn't dead. Anyway, I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. Now here's part where the women folk come in and sing the song. Turn the lights off, bar the doors. We'll leave all the worries of the world behind. Now, let me get a little help from my friend here, little JR. Hold me in your arms, never let me go. Baby, it's true, I got a one-track mind. But it's hard to concentrate around a girl like mine. And I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. Turn the lights off, mother, bar the door, and we will leave every worry in this world behind. Hold me in your arms, for God's sake. Never let me go. I'm the kind of guy who likes to get things right. So when I sign a talent, I like to make sure that talent can perform and has that next gear, that elusive next gear in their magic. And you won't find me complaining if it takes all night. He worked 45 minutes or an hour. I don't care. I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. You know, I'm blowing myself up here, Nick. I gotta take a little swig of the water here. Ah, that's good stuff right there. As good as Oklahoma. I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. Maybe what we're doing might be wrong. How in the hell could we be wrong? Nobody can be right or wrong in this world, folks. Never knew that love could take so long. I never knew that love could take so long. Thought I'd repeat that for you so you get it. Well, I wake up in her arms, the sunlight peeking through the curtains in my room. Oh, my boy. And there's just one thing that I'm thinking. I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. Don't you know I mind when I'm thinking about being with my baby tonight? Turn the lights off, bar the doors, and we will leave every single worry in this world behind. Hold me in your arms and never let me go. I wake up in her arms with the sunlight peeking right through the curtains in my room. And I swear that all I am thinking is that I can't wait to be alone with my baby tonight. You know, I lose my mind, folks, when I'm thinking about being on a Casper mattress with my baby tonight. I can't wait to be alone with Conrad Thompson. I can't wait to be alone with the beautiful 1-800-Flower service. I can't wait to be alone with 1-800-Collect. Can't wait to be alone. My God, I cannot wait to be alone with my baby tonight, baby tonight, baby tonight, baby tonight.
Our traveling fanboys.